Welcome to episode 47 of Skyjacks, Courier's Call. I'm your host and narrator, Drew Merzieski. I'm joined by Allison Grauer, Palomi Pratap, and Eric Atano-Sayez to bring you a story of adventure, skyships, mail carriers, and kids, just like you. Last time, the couriers made their first visit to the Swiftwell Manor House. Bobby Jean and Braith had a heart-to-heart about what Braith's promotion really means. June agreed to go to prom with Relia. Braith agreed to go with Auric, and everyone chose their Audrin prom outfits from the dozens of wardrobes and trunks of fine clothes. Prom's really going to be a night to remember, y'all. Heed the call, couriers. Stand to, and let's fly.
Gone are the days when it was easy to ride.
Singing way, hey, ho.
But the years haven't withered my joy and my pride.
Singing way, hey, ho.
I've never been much for the pistol or blade.
Singing way, hey, ho.
For the sun is my course and the sky is my trade.
Singing way, hey, ho.
My mother, she told me that life would be fine if you're free with the water but savor the wine. And to never be hurried but always on time.
Singing way, hey, ho. Singing way, hey.
The choosing of clothes takes, I would say, a little over an hour, maybe a little bit longer as people move through. There's a flurry of activity in the very beginning, and then towards the end of it, it's a lot of trading. It's a lot of like, fine, you may have my shoes.
Yeah.
The black market.
Barter and trade, baby. Yeah.
Some people, all they do is just grab as many clothes as they can and then trade off stuff to finally get exactly what they want.
These are usually the non-Thornvale kids.
Yeah.
Like, Bootstrap figured this out immediately.
You know, yeah. He did.
Figured out
you
the
know.
Economy.
He's for- there, too. We mm-hmm. see Bootstrap standing up there being like, all right, I got two boots here. Okay, all right, there you go. Another one over there.
Yeah. Oh, looks like you need a match for that very distinct red boot. Well, I know somebody who's got furnace duty who does not want it. So if you would like to trade, I'm welcome to do it.
There's a lot of that happening through this hour. And it's a lot of fun. And people enjoy it. And people try things on. They're like, I don't like this. I'm gonna try something else on. Dates are cemented here as everything goes on. I do have a question. Ard goes and looks for his clothes. But in the meantime, while he's looking, I imagine that Dennison goes up to Olivia and goes, are you going to find something as well? Or did you bring clothes?
Oh, I had my eye on something, but I also didn't want to jump in line. I am, after all, a guest.
That's very kind of you, Olivia. But anything you like, don't worry. We'll get it for you. You are as a guest.
Olivia, just brushes her shoulder lightly. I think actually, brushes some hair over her shoulder. And the small, entourage of Youngblood soldiers brings out a custom Youngblood grabber that they have that is, of course, gilded
gold.
With gold and silver. It reaches up, and there is a mask on the wall that looks rougher, does not look as fine and brightly painted as some of the other masks. It is made of leather and bone. Pulled off the wall, it is a dragon mask that is made Ooh. With shark's teeth.
Cool.
There is a bit of Jiltaran flair in it. I have to imagine, Palomi, and correct me if I'm wrong, that the Jiltarans might incorporate pieces of Leviathans that they have defeated into masks and ceremonial clothing.
Ceremonial clothing, ceremonial ink, all over everything.
Yeah, so this is made, it is a mask of a dragon made with Leviathan teeth.
Cool. Sick.
That's really cool.
That's cool.
And if I'm to understand the custom correctly, I do know that an invitation was made, but I suppose it must be official.
For my plus one, for you. Is that what you're saying?
Indeed.
Oh, yeah. Well, I'm not entirely sure. Maybe you'd want to ask young Ard over there as well.
He seems
more your speed. And Dennison winks. The captain winks.
I enjoy the company of Ard, and I find him quite charming, and I will be open to speaking to him at the dance itself. However, Denny, I've come here for you.
I worried as much. All right, then. I will happily, and he does an elegant bow. Would you be my date, Olivia Youngblood, for Audrin Prom?
I will happily accept, if you will accept this gift.
And Olivia gestures, and there is someone standing next to her with a small wooden box. It's like a foot tall, probably.
I see Denison kind of sucking his teeth a little bit and kind of a gifts. Oh, all right, let's find out what it is. And he opens it.
Opening it up, you find inside a bottle. It is a strange looking bottle. I think it's like glass and steel, and there is written on it in the most like peculiarly regular engraving that I think Denison has ever seen. And it says Vespian Reserve.
Wine?
Something like that. It's a taste of what could be to come. Drink it alone, and not all at once. I need you to see what's possible.
All right, then. I promise. Thank you for the gift. And he takes it. He just puts it in the pocket of, like, his coat. He's got a big, deep pocket and it's just sitting out there.
Yeah, his liquor pocket.
Liquor pocket. And
Daddy Captain's liquor pocket.
Daddy Captain's liquor pocket. Braith has snack pocket. Like, everybody's got a pocket.
It's a cultural thing.
Thanks, it has pockets.
Thanks.
And he goes, very well, I suppose I'll should show you around at least the town, either tonight or tomorrow if you like.
Being a very conflict-free region, I would be very curious to discover more.
Excellent. Shall we?
Olivia takes his arm.
And they walk away. I imagine that the evening rolls down. Everyone gets the clothes that they want to get and begin to trickle out of the manor house and head down back to the town. I will ask, though, Kieran, is there anything you want to do while you are in the manor house?
So I think
if you'd like,
there's like a procession. Oh,
isn't prom in the manor house, though?
It is. The prom, okay, prom, so will, there's still time.
We're going to be in here during prom,
too. Okay. Here's the thing, though, Palomi. I guarantee there are secret passages here.
Right. So that's what I'm thinking.
You've got to discover one.
I feel like, at the very least, there's a procession out of the manor house at a certain point. Everyone's found all of the clothes that they would like to wear. They have settled on who they're going to Audrin Prom with. And there's sort of this mass exodus from this room where everyone was kind of grabbing costumes and stuff. And Kieran, kind of as they were coming in, Kieran was lagging behind, taking in the sights, and they're doing the same thing now as everyone's leaving. Maybe like June and Cece are having a conversation, walking in front of them, and they're just kind of hanging back. And there's a room or a passageway that they kind of just hang at the entrance of for a second and then cut down and go off to destinations unknown to do some mischief.
I would love for you to pull a luminary to see if you find anything. Roll that wheel.
Please hold.
See it.
Holding for wheel.
Holding for wheel.
Stand by.
Thank you, Will.
Thank you.
The drought.
Misfortune, scarcity, desperation. I mean, here's the thing. My initial thought is to say, you don't find anything, but that's not fun. That's not fun at all.
James.
So I want to say that you find... I know exactly. Oh, okay, I think I know what it is. You find a greenhouse here that is completely desolate, except for a single apple tree at the back. It takes you a while to find this place. You actually have to go down a couple of corridors that you didn't realize were there. It's very much like you walked past them and didn't see them, but were able to like, oh, there's something here, and there's a passageway, and it leads you down to this moonlit greenhouse. All the other plants in here have long since withered and died, but there is this apple tree that still exists at the end of it. And there, on this apple tree, you find there are names carved into the bark, and each name has been crossed out, and then carved and crossed out, and carved and crossed out, and crossed out, and the final name is uncrossed out.
And Drew, I do have to point out, since you've made this something from a long corridor, and we do have dead plants, and obviously the apple tree is the only thing that is still living in here, but this has to be the overgrown greenhouse that warns you not to go in it.
Oh, yeah.
Yes!
Yeah. It is. Yes. This is a part of it. I feel like there's like...
It's sprawling.
Yeah, it's a sprawling greenhouse. But yes, this is that greenhouse.
Caspria.
Caspria is the name that's written at the bottom of this. You see that it looks like this tree has been tried to be cut down a bunch of different times, but for some reason it refuses to die.
There is an axe head that has just like been overgrown and enveloped.
What do you do?
What's the name right before Caspria?
Oh, it's illegible. No, it's not actually. It's Mace.
How far back do the names go before they're just completely illegible?
The names only go back about 5 or 6 generations. But the first name is Artemond, is the first name.
Do these names mean something to Kieran?
To like, Kieran? No, I don't think they do.
There's no story or anything that they have heard
about these names.
What's the axe head overgrown with?
Wood from the tree.
The tree's eating it.
Like they chopped the tree and then broke the handle off, and the head is still buried in the bark, and the bark has grown over and around it.
I think without paying attention, Kieran puts a hand on the tree, like maybe to lean in and get a closer look at some of the names, because they're not legible from just a standing distance.
It's a foreboding feeling touching the tree.
Oh.
Kieran, I think you get a very distinct sensation of being watched from above.
I look up.
There is a star that is shining through one of the panes of broken glass in here. It is a fixed star. Whether Kieran has done any star watching or not, they should probably be able to identify it because it's a star that is also very important to the Jiltarans, the Morning Star.
Is this your tree?
I think you can feel, without words, the answer of the star. And it's a yes and a no.
Are you Caspria?
Kieran, I think the glass panes rattle here.
Oh.
Rattle with the moaning song of a choir. And in a voice that sounds like shattered glass, breaking over and over again. No. But I am someone who values names. I don't think this name is yours, but I can see one that is.
I think Kieran looks back over the tree to see if they can find a name that they recognize, whether it's theirs or someone else's.
No, it's just names. And they all look crossed out. They don't seem to have any power behind them.
Your name used to be caught in the jaws of a whale. And it's looking for you. It wants to find you.
I think Kieran is very solemn. Kieran's very solemn at this point.
Kieran? Hey, Kieran?
Is it Bran?
It's Bran.
Kieran tries to climb up the tree to hide.
Okay.
Just an instinctive thing.
Is it big
thing.
Enough to climb into?
Yeah, it's big enough to climb into. Hello? And we see Bran kind of looking around at the bottom. Kieran?
They like slowly bunch up the skirt that they're still wearing so that it doesn't hang below the branches.
And we see Bran kind of walk around looking a bit, and he then turns around and goes back up to the stairs and goes, no, they're not down here either. Keep looking. No, it's just a greenhouse. Creepy greenhouse. And he goes back up the steps. Kieran, I imagine you fall asleep in this tree.
James!
But when you awaken, you do not awaken there. You awaken back in your bed. And there is a single apple with you.
Oh, boy.
I think what happens is by the time June, you and Cece and the rest of the Red Audren go back, like maybe Kieran is already there, back asleep in their bed. And you don't wake Kieran as you get back in your bed. You hang up your clothes and make sure that everything is ready for tomorrow for Audren prom. And we see the three of you fall asleep as snow begins to fall outside your windows.
Gone are the days when it was easy to ride. That's so obviously the end that I had to do it.
Yeah.
Wow.
Hello, couriers, and welcome to The Mineral. I'm Drew, your host and narrator. We wanted to take a brief pause to say thank you for all of you being here and being a part of our story. We couldn't do it without you. And now, since we have no other particular announcements this week, let's get back in the sky.
Singing way, hey, ho.
Wine?
Something like that. It's a taste of what could be to come. Drink it alone, and not all at once. I need you to see what's possible.
All right, then. Promise. Thank you for the gift.
And I need to know when and if he tried it, because there's important information that you might need.
Absolutely believe that he did try it.
So what I kind of want for this scene, because I do imagine that this is like he said, it's late. He's hurrying everyone off the ship. He looks over at this bottle. He opens it up, pours himself a little bit of it, and his cat, whom...
Lysander,
yeah, of course. So Lysander is kind of watching him curiously and, you know, swishing the tail. Like, there's that little bit of, like, is this dangerous? Like, you're being a little intense about taking a drink of this. And we, as the audience, are kind of, like, looking at Lysander. And I think Dennison, you know, takes this drink and probably feels internally like this is a fine drink. It is. It tastes very good. It's extremely smooth. It's well aged and all that. But the audience can see Lysander looks younger. Oh. And we can see in a mirror that Dennison does not bother to look in. He looks around 10 years younger.
Oh, gosh.
Last night it snowed, and this morning the world is covered in white. There is snow everywhere, and the sun is shining, and the sky is that pristine color of blue. This morning, we see our heroes and the rest of the Red Audrin in the Red Audrin cabin, the common cabin, and everyone is sitting down to breakfast. Last night, everyone got their clothes. And so this morning, the rest of the Red Audrin is talking about what they're wearing and how they're going to dress it up and what they're going to wear instead and how they're going to do their hair and their makeup. And everyone is super excited because today is Audrin prom. Kieran, June, and Cece, where do we see the three of you sitting at breakfast?
Is there like a diner?
It's a bit like... I think it's like a buffet. Like,
it's got to be buffet
cabin?
Style.
It's in the Red Audrin common cabin.
Okay. Oh, then yeah. It's buffet style. This is like a brunch.
And we do see Captain Dennison in the kitchen cooking.
Does he have a little hairnet on?
He's got a bandana on, like long johns.
I love it.
And he's not wearing his waistcoat. He's got an apron on. He's got his sleeves rolled up.
What does the Red Audrin apron say?
Audrin apron says, "The early bird gets the worm." And there's a griffin on it.
Aww.
And it's eating a red feather soldier.
Someone added that after the fact.
I have to imagine like the crude human form was like definitely needle pointed by some team.
So generous of you to call a stick figure a crude human form.
this was a secret Santa present for Captain Dennison one year on the Audra, and he's held on to it.
But we see him back there, like, cooking eggs and flapjacks and a bunch of other things and then kind of putting them out and people coming and grabbing them.
Does he look grumpy?
No. Actually, as the three of you kind of, I imagine, like, you guys have been in line, you grabbed food. Captain Dennison looks happier than you've probably seen him in a while.
Oh. Mm.
I roll an insight check. I'm suspicious immediately. No,
Joy?
Are we like walking up into the cafeteria, like, you know, like Sloppy Joe Day type thing with like a tray?
And yeah.
A
plate?
Good morning, Captain.
Good morning to you. Witwick, Raoul, really? Hymnal.
Oh,
what can delightful. I get you for? Flapjacks, bacon, eggs, whatever you like. We're getting it to you today.
Oh. Whoa. This, so many options.
This is new. You're so jolly. I like it.
I slept well.
Ah, oh. No more hammock, I see. No more bat. No more upside down for Captain Denny.
No more closet.
What?
You sleep upside
nothing,
down.
Nothing, sir. I'll have
confused
some
confused look
some,
on his face.
Some eggs and bacon, please.
All right, some eggs and bacon for you, Hymnal. How about you, Rao?
I have. Do you not sleep upside down,
Kieran?
You think? And we see Captain Dennison kind of lean forward and look at you, Kieran, and go, "You think I sleep upside down?"
Well, Cece said you slept upside down,
like a bat.
Like a bat.
That is correct.
Yeah,
and
to save
Cece
room
leans,
in the closet, sir.
Cece leans forward, so. Only thing between the two, Captain Edison and Cece, is the Sizzler sneeze guard that is very much in the way here.
No, Rao, I don't sleep like a bat. I have a bed on the Audrin. It's not a very big bed, but it is a bed.
Oh, okay.
Well, congratulations on your big kid bed.
Yeah.
Heck yeah.
That's
moving up in the world, Captain Denny.
I'll have some pancakes and eggs.
All right, we'll get you some pancakes then.
We see him go over and like put some pancakes onto a plate. And how about you, Wait, what can I get you?
We got a big day ahead of us, so I need a big girl breakfast. I need something that's going to give me strength, power, and energy. What you got for me, boss?
We see him kind of smirk and he goes over and he gives you a big bowl of porridge.
Oh, this. Okay. See, when I saw those pancakes, I was like, oh, yeah, there's probably something for power back there. But that, thank you. This is porridge. Is there anything in this porridge, sir?
No, it's mostly just oats and milk.
Ah, power sauce. Got it. Thank you, sir. And Cece sadly strolls away.
We see Dennison, like, smile. And as you are leaving June, he passes a plate of, like, bacon and, like, ham and some eggs and hands it to you and goes, give that to Cece.
June nods emphatically. Thank you, sir. Brings it over to Cece.
Power sauce.
Cece, the captain was just, I think he was joking with you.
Cece is,
I'm
like,
not sure.
Gobbling this stuff up. Like, why would you joke about power sauce, though? Why would anybody joke?
Some of it's getting on me.
Okay. Cece, did you want some of the flapjacks and the bacon and everything?
That stuff has to be earned.
I do have an extra plate right here.
It's about drive. It's about power. We stay hungry. We devour.
June waits for an opening and then swaps out the porridge bowl with the flapjack plate.
Cece keeps eating without stopping, just immediately consuming flapjacks as well.
I think she's fine. And June sits down next to her on the bench.
That was pretty good.
I mean, this is an intense breakfast spread.
Fantastic.
June kind of like looks around to see everybody else digging into everything, but then picks up like her fork and everything and then goes, so, Kieran, what happened last night?
Which part?
The part where we couldn't find you for a while. Like, where'd you go?
Where did I go?
Did you need to just like dip out? Like, was it too warm in there? Were you uncomfortable socially? Was there something we could have done to assist you? You just sort of like you don't usually do that. You usually at least like let us know if you're gonna leave. And you kind of left.
Karen chews on whatever they're eating and thinks for a second.
Like, most time you vibrate into another dimension, and, like, we see you in, like, a couple seconds, but it's been, like, 5 days for you, but a second for us. But this time you were, like, gone.
They kind of, like, put their arms on June and Cece's shoulders and, like, brings them in. Okay. You cannot tell anybody.
I'm going to tell June.
That's fine.
Yeah, I was going to tell Cece, but...
That's fine.
Okay.
I found...
Does that clarify?
A tree.
Okay.
Yeah.
And it was pretty cool and kind of creepy.
Oh.
And I found the tree because I kind of got lost.
No.
And then I think something was trying to chase me.
In the house?
Yeah.
I think so. I didn't really get a good look at it, but the tree was there. And so I just kind of went for it.
Anyway, I found something cool, and we get back to our bunks. I'll show you.
The suspense is killing me!
Yeah, what?
Like, Cece, keep it down.
I'm sorry.
You found a cool tree, and then you found like a treasure or something?
In fairness, the tree was more creepy than cool.
Oh, okay.
Cool. But like, you know, that's kind of cool. But yeah, I took a nap in it because, I mean, it was late, right?
What? Wait, was this real life or was this a dream?
I don't know.
Sounds like a dream.
I super don't know is the thing. I all I know is there was a tree and I was in it and then I found something and then I was like, okay, it's time to go. And then I went.
Okay.
Okay, because we like, we went looking for you and we couldn't find you and it felt like a while. And when we couldn't find you, we regrouped with Bran and he was like, well, let me walk you guys back to your cabin just in case. And we got back to the cabin and you were already in bed. Like, are you sure you didn't just go straight back to the cabin?
I'm pretty sure because I have a thing that I didn't have before.
Oh, okay. That is a good point.
So you were sleepwalking or you were like magically projecting an essence that went and stole some magic fruit from a tree and then you raced back and were in bed.
I mean, that's always possible.
That sounds more logical. Right? We do cool stuff like that all the time.
Yeah.
Perhaps.
Like, I fully could have just astral projected into a tree and, like,
yeah, right?
Picked
like,
an apple.
That makes complete sense. And then I ended up with it. It's something you would totally do.
Yeah.
I think it's just nerves about prom, honestly.
Yeah. I wonder what the tree symbolizes.
Yeah. Do you have a book? Do you have a dream book, June?
I don't, but we could probably ask the Black Audrin about it.
You do have a dream book. Every time you tell me about your dreams, I write them down.
Do you?
What?
Oh, that's so nice.
Yeah. Yeah. Because you told me about it. So I was like, okay, I'm going to write this down so we can remember it for later in case it becomes important.
Oh, man.
And did it become important?
I mean, not yet.
I usually don't remember my dreams after very long, so.
I remember every dream. Every night.
Bobby Jean, what are you doing for breakfast?
Oh, Bobby Jean, first of all, is in the middle of training, physical conditioning for the prom. And what does that entail? Using his grabber arms. So you can see Bobby Jean with two grabber arms currently delicately balancing several plates of food together. There's a big bowl of congee. There are biscuits. So he's foregone biscuits and gravy and gone with congee and biscuits, which is a wonderful meal.
Mm-hmm.
He's also got a small bowl of assorted eggs. So he's like sort of carefully, precariously like bringing them over to a table and like trying to figure out how he's going to be able to manipulate silverware and cutlery in order to bring the food to his face using his grabber arms.
Do the grabber arms only have the two-pronged grabbers, or are there multiple prongs?
No, it's a two-prong grabber situation.
Are they wide or are they delicate like fingers?
I am going to say they're like, they're good for detail work, you know? They're going to be delicate.
Mm. Cool.
I feel like some of the Red Audrin crew, as you're going through, Bobby Jean, they're like taking little bits off of your plate because you have a hard time. They're like, Bobby, let me... Hey, Bobby, I'm just gonna take that toast. All right, I'm just gonna. Hey,
hey,
one second. Hey, what?
Do you want to live, Brian? You want to live to see prom?
Yeah, dude. Yeah, but if I can't, if I die of hunger,
never touch another man's food.
All right,
Brian, I love you. I love you like a brother. Never touch a Cooper's plate. Never touch Cooper's plate.
All right, I'm gonna back off then.
Yeah, you're good.
Or was like,
hey, Bran, yeah, you're gonna back off then. Okay.
All right, I'm backing
okay.
off. I'm backing off.
And you can see him like slowly manipulate like this gloopy egg that's like balanced on a fork and it does land on his face.
Yep.
And he kind of aggressively eats it off, like trying to maintain all the power.
Good.
Have you ever seen anybody, there's like a game where you put a cookie on your face and you manipulate it till you can eat it? You ever seen it? That's a real game.
Like
it's a real
game.
I've played that. Yeah.
It's like a
it's
game.
Very much like that.
Mm-hmm.
As everyone is sitting there eating, enjoying, talking, having fun, a bell is rung. And Captain Dennison, who is behind the counter, basically is like, all right, my apprentices, my Red Audrin crew. Welcome to an Audrin prom day. So,
Got a lot of work to do, a lot of things to get done, a lot of things we need to get done with the Red Audrin before. I'm just kidding. It is a free day for all of you.
Captain, you had me.
That was like not funny because absolutely I would have believed that.
Yeah.
Like 100%.
Like rolling up my sleeves. Like,
yeah. Like,
you know.
I immediately was like, we got
to
go.
I was ready to make my dancing shoes my working shoes, Captain.
I had a case of the Mondays, Captain.
Well, I appreciate you understanding my my very nature as it was. But was a joke. You all have a free day to do whatever you like.
With madmen who claim to be kings, singing way, hey, ho. And I've seen the destruction their tempers can bring, singing way, hey, ho. I've ridden the winds over mountain and plain, singing way, hey, ho. Just to circle the coast and curse the mariner's name, singing way, hey, ho. My father, he told me to never deceive. A voice to the hopeless and help those in need, and to ever be thankful for what you receive. Sing it way, hey, ho. Sing it way, hey, ho.
At the bottom of the Red Audrin, there is the mailroom, and next to the mailroom, there's a smaller door that seems to get smaller every time we see it, with the words office on it, and a little cooler underneath it. This is the sorting room.
Who wants pancakes?
Me.
Good.
Me.
Chef,
wait, are you making pancakes?
Oh, yeah. She's got a hot plate, and she's cooking them up.
Cece. Where did you get a hot plate?
We have it on board. This one was broken, and I repaired it. So restored an antique.
Cece can just run back down to the furnace room and get it hot again in, like, 2 seconds.
That's true. I'm literally just bringing little cups of coal and then putting them in, like, a little grill. And then I have, a pan on top, and I'm making flapjacks. And Cece's leaning into it. Like, Cece has, like, a big mustache. She has a chef's hat that's like an old boot that's on her head. And
oh, yeah. Chef Cece. What's
chef
up?
Cece, of course. Chef Cece is here.
On my mind.
Who wants a... You want a flapjack, child?
I would love a flapjack, Chef Cece.
Boom. Pancake.
Boom.
It's very small, and they're not very good. When she tries to flip them in the pan, they do not flip.
Yeah. Cece, I think we're missing some things here.
What are you missing?
Well, no, I mean, I noticed that the pancakes aren't flipping, and I'm wondering if, like, did you put, like, butter in the pan or anything? Like...
I have never done this before.
Okay, so...
Not once.
So June moves over to sort of show Cece, like, kind of what's going on. If I may, Chef.
Ah, Chef June takes the boot, funk, puts it on your head. Yeah, can you do this? Because I am struggling.
Well, June needs the mustache, too.
I don't want...
Clips it off.
Yeah, when Cece puts the mustache on June, June goes, oh, yes, it's Chef June. Here I am.
It is the power.
I'm going to make the pancakes for you.
Hun, hun, hun.
Cannot believe I'm doing this bit, but here we are. She starts making the pancakes.
Wait a minute. Look under the pancake.
Okay. June lifts the corner of the pancake.
It's a ladder.
Why is the letter in here? That's a... Cece,
you told me
Cece,
to put butter
hazard.
In. You told me to grease the pan. And so I figured this letter's got
earlier,
some extra spicy sauce in it that could get us our
pan.
We
did use an old butter dish to store some of the letters.
See?
We did.
Yeah.
No, I know.
That's on me.
Here,
I didn't
Cece,
realize
take this.
Chef Cece
take this.
Was going to
okay,
shop.
Okay. Crunkle, 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 crunkle. Ahem. Dear Red Audrin. Hey, we're on that. My mom, I have one of those, has a strict no pets policy. Well, I love animals, and a few weeks ago, I found an injured baby cardinal. No.
Oh my gosh.
I took him home, hid him in my bedroom, and I've nursed him back to health. The only problem is now, Greg is great. Greg won't stop eating or growing. He's the size of a house cat and getting bigger every day. My mom is already getting suspicious of all the bird call practice and how much food I'm eating in my room. She will kill me if she finds out. What should I do? Come clean and hope for the best? Run away in the night with Greg? Help! Sincerely, soon to be forever grounded and Greg Bird.
Greg's a really good name for a bird.
Solid
Greg
bird
is a really good name for a bird. Yes. Oh,
here, let me help you with that, Chef June. And I like take the mustache off.
Thank you. Thank you, Kieran. Thank you. Yeah. I mean, obviously, my first instinct is run away into the night with Greg. But I feel like if I take a step back from that instinct, I think part of the follow-up question should be, why will your mom kill you if she finds out about Greg? Is it because she's allergic to birds?
Mm.
Is it because she's scared of birds? Is it because she doesn't think that you're responsible enough for a bird? Like, there's a lot of factors here.
That's
you know what I mean?
Oh, absolutely. Like,
if it's because the bird's going to make her sick or whatever, then you kind of have to respect her space. But if it's about responsibility and things like that, there are ways you can kind of, like, offer proof of the fact that you're willing to commit and take care of Greg.
To me, it seems like you need to find a new place to hide Greg, because it'll solve the problem of if you're not responsible enough, because you are, because you know Greg needs a bigger place. And it'll solve the problem of your mom is sick or afraid of birds, because then it won't be in the house.
That's a really good point, Kieran. That's good. Yeah. Sounds like you need a new stable.
If you have a barn or like a tower, I think that could work.
In my opinion, transparency is an important thing. If you love this bird and you love your mom, you gotta be transparent. You gotta share. You gotta say, Ma, this is Greg. You know, your rules, your house, your rules just right. Greg back steakhouse. And
you, Chef CC really misses her old place of work.
I do. Yeah. I miss waiting tables at Greg back steakhouse. It was, you know, the staff was just great. Everybody cared. But anyway, you got to come clean. It's your mom's house. You know, it's your mom's rules. If you respect the roof over your head, you'll come clean about Greg. And who knows? You never know. We always think the worst thing is going to happen. But who knows? Your mom might be like, I love Greg too. Greg can stay. And then you two can ride Greg together. You can take Greg on walks together. And like you don't have to live in the shadows. You know, it's always, whenever you take your medicine, you're always like, gross. But then you feel better because you're like, it was better for me in the long run. So it's going to sting when you're like, Mom, this is Greg. But once Greg is out in the open, Greg can fly free. Be free. Be free, letter person. Be free, butter dish. And Cece throws the butter dish across the room in a fit of passion.
It goes fully out the window.
Oh, no. Whoever's below us, look out.
No.
Thank you for listening to Skyjacks, Courier's Call. Cecilia Witwick was played by Aaron Catano-Saez, who can be found on Twitter at Aaron Catano-Saez or on the podcast All My Fantasy Children. You can further support Aaron's work in voiceover and worldbuilding at patreon.com/AaronCatano-Saez. June Hymnal was played by Allison Grauer, who can be found on Twitter at Dreams to Become. You can further support Allie's creative work at patreon.com/WhimsyArtifice. This episode was also edited by Allison Grauer. Kieran Rao was played by Palomi Pertep, who can be found on Twitter at PalomiSP. You can hire Palomi for layout and graphic design by visiting her website at palomipertep.com. And I'm Drew Merzieski. You can find me on Twitter at Worlds to Forge, and can further support my storytelling and creative work at patreon.com/whimsyartifice. The original score for this program was composed and performed by Arnie Parrott, who can be found on Twitter at Arnie Parrott. Official artwork was created by Jess Kraczynski, who can be found on Twitter at angryartist113. Courier's Call is a spinoff of Campaign Skyjacks on the One Shot Podcast Network. The setting of Sphere was inspired by the music of the Decemberists and the game Illimat by Keith Baker, published by Together Studios. This podcast uses a modified version of the Cortex Prime system, designed by Cam Banks and published by Fandom Tabletop. Skyjack's Courier's Call is a part of the One Shot Podcast Network. Other One Shot podcasts include
Design Doc. Join hosts Hannah Schaefer and Evan Rowland as they redesign their first role-playing game, Questlandia. Design Doc is an experiment in public participatory analog game design. It's fun, it's messy, and you're along for the ride. And remember, while our show is rated E for everyone, this show was created by adults for adults, so listen at your own discretion.
That's all for this week. Until next time, heed the call, couriers. Right wrongs, do mercies, and take flight.
I'll tell you, my children, there's much I don't know, but the wind, she will take you where'er you must go, and it's better to age than never to grow. Singing way, hey, ho, singing way, hey, ho.